It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Pierce Freelon. He's launched organizations to address social justice issues through arts activism. Black Space in his hometown of Durham, North Carolina, focuses on youth arts. His beat-making lab has traveled the globe. In 2018, he co-directed the short film series, The History of White People in America. Here's a sample.
White people, listen to this. In America in the early 1600s, you didn't exist.
You didn't exist?
I hate to break it to you like this. Listen to what your history books missed. What would be made white were completely unrelated, under-melanated people. Frankenstein, collaged by an optical illusion. The ultimate mirage called race. A social construction like Santa Claus. Back in the day, y'all either English...
What do you want to know about community building and African-American visionaries? We're at 800-642-1234. Pierce Freelon is a musician, director, social entrepreneur, and a state Senate candidate in North Carolina. He will be in Wisconsin Thursday to give the keynote for UW-Madison's Black History Month celebration. Pierce, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
You really call on your ancestors. You look to respect to the continent of Africa. How do Afrofuturists, you know, look at that respect in informed by how they're living daily lives today as Black Americans?
Well, you know, my grandmother used to always say things like, lift as you climb. She always used to tell me and my siblings that we stand on the shoulders of giants, our ancestors. She never wanted us to forget where we came from, which was an important part of the system of institutional slavery and white supremacy. When they brought enslaved Africans to this country, one of the first things they did was they changed your name. You know, they took away your culture and your legacy. They stopped, prevented you from practicing your ancient religious and cultural traditions. And they tried to impose a new set of traditions on us. And so it's an act of resistance to claim and to celebrate and to honor and to uplift our ancestors and remember our names and remember our traditions and follow in the footsteps of our ancestors.
In particular, Harriet Tubman is someone you look up to, think about a lot. What do you see in her?
Well, Harriet Tubman was an Afrofuturist, like so many leaders in the Black freedom struggle. If you just got to imagine, if you put yourself in Harriet's shoes and just imagine having ancestors of yours, recent mother, grandmother, great-grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends, everybody enslaved, and you have a vision to move and to build into a future where slavery doesn't exist, where you can move as you choose and have the freedoms of the other folks in your society and culture. That's Afrofuturism. It took a lot of creativity, a lot of imagination, a lot of dreaming to look at your current situation and say, I can create something better for myself. And I really admire that.
How do you start on this journey today to reimagine when you look at yourself, when you look at your colleagues around you and the work that you're doing?
Well, again, going back to those ancestors, I think Black folks in this country, folks who suffered from oppression, have to be resilient, and they have to know their own worth and their own value, and they have to look at systems like institutional slavery and say, I deserve better. I can do better. And guess what? I'm going to do everything I can, pool all my resources and my intellect and my community to create that better future. That's what Harriet Tubman did. That's what Dr. Martin Luther King did when he looked at segregation and Jim Crow. You know, I deserve to be able to attend the elite educational institution of this country, to eat at the restaurants, to have the same privileges. And even today, I mean, there's still a broad, sweeping set of systems from the education system, the prison industrial complex, where Black folks are disproportionately targeted, policing. There's a lot of different areas where having Black or brown skin puts you at a disadvantage relative to other people. And we believe that we can do better and that we deserve more. And so I think for me, the biggest thing is to remember that I had ancestors who made the same observations that I was making and who fought and struggled and persevered and were resilient in the face of oppression.
So much of your work is tied to the arts. How do you see the arts and science and technology all connected to Afrofuturism?
Well, the arts have always been a tool of African people to get free. I mean, you brought up Harriet, so I'm going to keep going back to her. Harriet Tubman used spirituals as coded language to help people get free. Spirituals like, you know, Go Down Moses. These would be, you know, coded language, private messages to enslaved Africans that, hey, the Underground Railroad is coming through tonight. This is your cue. Songs like Wade in the Water were instructions on how to escape slaves, to go through the water so the slave catching dogs can't smell you. During the civil rights movement, we've had, you know, going as far back to Ida B. Wells before the civil rights movement, and Billie Holiday with her song Strange Fruit. You know, this is music, changing public perceptions, helping open up those emotional and empathetic channels to tell people about the terrors of lynchings. It was music that did that, and it was music that, you know, helped lead us in the fight against the war in Vietnam, you know, whether it's Marvin Gaye or even up to the present with hip hop. Music and art has been a really important tool for oppressed people to make critiques of systems of oppression and to find comfort and to chart a path forward that is emancipatory and that celebrates the full humanity of the oppressed people.
We're talking with Pierce Freelon, who is a musician, a college instructor, a social entrepreneur. We're looking at Afrofuturism and what it means today, looking back at ancestors. How do you think Afrofuturism can change the world? What does it mean to you? How did you get introduced to it? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. So, Pierce, explain for us, because the term Afrofuturism was only coined like in the early 1990s. Where did it come from?
Yeah, well, I mean, there were people like DJ Spooky and folks out in California who coined the term. But the idea behind it has been around a lot longer than the actual system. And sometimes it takes us a while to name things, you know, things like a word like patriarchy or sexual harassment. You know, these are words that were also kind of, you know, coined in the 90s that came into our conscience more recently. But, you know, we know good and well that sexism existed. Well, sexism specifically, I was talking about sexual harassment was a term that is more recent, but the systems that undergird these terms and the scholarship and the people thinking and working through these ideas has been around much longer. Racism is a newer term than the actual system of white supremacy. So I think sometimes it takes our words a little bit of time to catch up to reality, but Afrofuturism is in that same boat. As I mentioned, I mentioned several Afrofuturists already, but it's just Black folks who have the courage and the creativity and the imagination, which is why art is an important part. It requires an imagination because you have to look at the world as it is and say something better is possible. And that's something, you know, not just Black folks, futurists of different backgrounds have been doing for a long time. And we need people with a creative vision for the future to help chart our path forward. Otherwise, we'll be kind of lethargic and kind of, you know, entrenched in our current ways. And there are a lot of people who are stuck in their ways. And then there's always the innovators. And oftentimes it comes from a younger generation for people, you know, to craft a new future.
I want to look for a moment at the film space and the movie Black Panther in particular from 2018, nearly all Black cast, and it really inspired young people connecting to Afrofuturism as perhaps a genre. What did you see there?
Yeah, Black Panther is a wonderful film. You know, the director, though, if you look back at his body of work, Ryan Coogler, he has a number of wonderful films. He has you can actually Google it. If you Google Ryan Coogler, he has a film on Vimeo. It was his first film that he made when he was still in college. He was a football player and made a film called Locks about a guy who's walking down the street and being basically racially profiled because of his hair And he goes to the barbershop to cut his hair off. Presumably, you think, as you're watching, spoiler alert, by the way, I'm telling you what happened. He gets his hair cut, supposedly to, you know, avoid being persecuted. And then when he gets home and sits down next to his sister, who takes off a wig, you find out that his sister has cancer, and he was actually cutting his hair to be in solidarity with his sister, who is dealing with this illness. It's a short film. It's a silent film. And it's really incredibly moving and incredibly powerful, and just talks about perception and race and health and wellness and family and brotherhood, sisterhood. And, you know, when you go back, there's a word, Sankofa. It means you need to look back in order to move forward. If you look back at this body of work from Ryan Coogler, and then look at Fruitvale Station and Creed and, you know, what built up to Black Panther, it makes complete sense that he would make such a gem, such a masterpiece. You know, I just think that it's really important that Black makers and Black creators are leveraging popular culture to tell our stories from our perspectives, and to provide that nuanced vision that only people from that culture can present. And especially, you know, when I think about Black Panther in the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I'm a huge comic book fan, but, you know, we got Iron Man 1, 2, and 3, Thor 1, 2, and 3, three Captain Americas, two Guardians of the Galaxy, like so many movies centering white men, Doctor Strange, Ant-Man, like all before we got one Black superhero movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And of course, it was the biggest one of them all, of the solo films outside of the Avengers group films. But that just shows how resilient we can be if we're just given a shot, you know?
We're talking with arts activist and entrepreneur Pierce Freelon as we explore reimagining the Black future. What do you want to know about beat making? How would you describe Black existence today, where it's headed? How do you connect with your Black ancestors to the struggles they felt and experienced? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking about Afrofuturism here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is the reimagining of the future for Black people through various mediums, through the arts, through media, through literature, with a strong connection to the past. And Pierce Freelon lives and breathes this cultural movement. In 2012, he co-founded the Beatmaking Lab. The PBS web series won an Emmy in 2015. Here's a sample. Goma, when my people need Amani. Peace is what you get when you stand up. The time is now, send me Wakati. They see me and ask, Una Tokawapi. Where you from? Carolina, but I'm really an African son. What does Afrofuturism mean to you? How is your community celebrating it? Who are your heroes? What did they say and do that inform how you live your life today? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. And Pierce Freelon, the musician, the director, the social entrepreneur, he stays with us. So, Pierce, we just heard a tiny bit of the Beatmaking Lab work. This took you to Democratic Republic of Congo, Panama, Senegal. What was the aim here?
The aim was to teach a curriculum on electronic music production. It was started as a class at UNC Chapel Hill, and like many classes, you get your 3 credit hours, you learn how to do something. And in the music department specifically, where we have a focus on classical and jazz music, it was pretty innovative at the time in 2011, 2012 to be offering a class that teaches hip hop, you know, that elevates rap to the same level as jazz vocals or opera, that elevates DJing up there with classical piano and guitar. So the idea with Beatmaking Lab started as a class and then quickly transformed into this community program. My colleague Applejuice Kidd and I, along with Dr. Mark Katz, who would later become the chair of our department, really saw the need to expand the reach of the curriculum from the campus into the community. And we did our first pilot program in the Congo, and then it was off to the races because PBS became interested and got involved as a funder and wanted to create a web series out of the program. So the first project in the Congo was just something that we you know, crowdsourced the money for ourselves. We did an Indiegogo, raised money independently from members of the community to buy equipment and plane tickets. And we captured that in a short film that we put on YouTube, and that got on PBS's radar, and they said, we want you to expand this and to do this all around the country and around the world.
You're a musician, you're a hip-hop artist, you're a social entrepreneur, but you're also running for a political office, specifically the state Senate seat in your home of North Carolina, Durham. How does politics inform your art and vice versa?
My art is very informed by music. My politics, my policies is very informed by art. I ran for mayor before I ran for state Senate in 2017. And it was really from a space of Afrofuturism. It was looking at the country and looking at the community that I was born and raised in, that I've lived in my whole life, and wanting to see some change that I wasn't seeing as a part of the agenda or the priority of folks who were holding office and were in power. And it was people like Maya Angelou, who passed away in the mid-2000s. She was close friends with my grandmother, and she had a poem which went on to inspire my policy platform. It was her poem, A Pledge to Our Youth, says, this is what we need for our kids. She said, we need clean and well-furnished schools, safe and non-threatening streets, and employment which makes use of our talents but does not degrade our dignity. You know, that's education, that is public safety, that's jobs. But it's told through the lens of poetry and through art from one of the world's most treasured poets, one of America's icons of poetry. So, you know, we built a platform inspired by those words. And as a state senator, I'm going to fight to make sure that, you know, education, public safety, housing, you know, that these things are a priority and that Black folks are centered as we look at how policies impact communities of color. Because oftentimes in this country, these policies are made without the African-American community in mind.
Well, let's take a piece of that with education. You have in Durham a digital makerspace that you founded, Black Space. What kind of work is done there, and how are you trying to fit that into Afrofuturism?
Well, Black Space deals with the digital divide. Right now, we have this booming tech sector in Silicon Valley, and Durham is in a unique position as a tech hub in the South, a quickly growing tech hub with a brilliant digital, Black Space is a digital makerspace, but we are housed in American Underground, which is a startup hub. It's an incubator, it's an accelerator for small businesses and startups. A lot of tech folks, a lot of folks that are doing work in the field of medicine. And so in collaboration with American Underground, we are providing a space to bridge the digital divide because there's not a lot of diversity, frankly, in Silicon Valley. And Durham is in a unique position to be the Silicon Valley of the South. And we have a lot of businesses that are minority owned, that are owned by Black and brown folks, that are owned by women. And Black Space is an important part of that conversation. We train kids in things like coding and 3D printing and music and poetry. And that art and science piece are kind of seamless when we are working with kids to try to expose them to career paths that can lead to living wage jobs and help provide opportunities for kids to take advantage of some of these jobs. Because right now there are a lot of jobs that the United States is needing to get people from outside of this country to occupy because our folks aren't trained up. We don't have the training. We don't have the skills to get a lot of the jobs that are available. And so we need programs, especially programs for Black and brown youth, to kind of give them some early exposure to some of these STEM driven jobs.
STEM fields. Yeah. Pierce Freelon is our guide here, founder of Black Space. It's a digital makerspace, the host of Beatmaking Lab. And he'll be giving the keynote presentation Thursday at a Black History Month celebration on the UW-Madison campus. Your thoughts on Afrofuturism at 800-642-1234. Pierce, I want to ask you a bit of a personal question. You have a unique tattoo on your left arm of a pyramid. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. I'm looking at it right now. So this was my father's, the first logo of his business. My dad, Phil Freelon, who passed away last year on July 9th and who I just found out was celebrated and honored at the NAACP Image Awards over the weekend. I wasn't watching, but I got a bunch of calls from my friends. Oh, we saw your dad. He's the architect who designed the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. He's done a number of other museums, the Harvey Gantt African American Museum in Charlotte, the Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta, the Reginald F. Lewis Museum in Baltimore, the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco. So this guy does black museums.
That's but where did the pyramid come from?
Well, so his first architecture company, the Freelon Group, which was started in the 90s, this logo was of a pyramid. It's a kind of a three-dimensional bird's eye view rendering of a pyramid. And the reason he chose a pyramid for his logo was because he was recognizing and honoring and celebrating the African legacies and, you know, the roots of mathematics and science that come from Africa. People like Imhotep, you know, one of the architects of the, you know, the great pyramids of Giza. These folks, you know, they come from Egypt, which is in Africa. And it was important for him to trace his roots as an architect back to those African regions.
Pierce, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Pierce Freelon is a musician, social entrepreneur, budding politician running for a state Senate seat in his native North Carolina. He'll be the keynote speaker for the Black History Month celebration at UW-Madison on Thursday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.